It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk about the legal options the U.S. and WNBA star Brittany Griner may have in the hopes of getting her released from what the State Department is now calling wrongful detainment in Russia. Now, Horseshoe Bay Farms in Door County is going to be experimenting with a different kind of garden this summer, a sculpture garden. As reported in the Door County and Peninsula Pulse, Horseshoe Bay has commissioned an artist known for his signature stick work, massive sculptures made out of sticks that people can interact with. Drew Richmond is the executive director of Horseshoe Bay Farms in Door County. Drew, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Before we check out this sculpture, can you tell us a little bit about Horseshoe Bay Farms?
Yeah, it's a 105-year-old historic farm. It was built in Egg Harbor, Wisconsin, up in Door County. And about 4 years ago, 5 years ago or so, a group of folks came together and purchased it and created it as a nonprofit. So it's a 501c3 nonprofit that is focusing on preserving the land and the barns and the structures around it, but also, trying to preserve our history and capture the history of this beautiful farm, and then also activating it, which kind of gets into this whole stick work piece.
Yeah. Tell us about what's going to be in the works for June.
Lots of things. So we're in our second, what we like to call our second year of operations. Last year was our first year, and it went great. And we had a lot of historical tours, and a lot of people really got to walk on the property for the first time ever. And we were able to reconnect with families and do all those other things from the farm. So for this year, we decided to change things up a little bit and continue to push our mission. And, we'll still have the historic tours, and we'll still have our beautiful Dahlia Gardens and all the other things, but we're going to bring in Patrick Doherty to do a stick work piece. And, like you said in the introduction, he's been doing this for 30 years, just a master creative mind. And he does it all by weaving massive sticks together, trailer truckload of a massive amount of sticks together to create these art pieces.
And there's an interactive part of it. Well, first of all, he's looking for some construction help.
Yeah, a lot of volunteers. A lot of volunteers are needed for this. He works with his son, Sam, and those are the only two that come in. Everybody else is volunteer, and there's lots of different roles. And if anybody wants to help, they're more than happy to reach out to me. But we need lots of volunteer help, and he does this all in about 3 weeks or so. I don't even have a draft of what he has in mind. He kind of does it a week before and shows up and goes after it.
Now, I cheated and looked at some pictures of his work, but for everybody else, can you paint a picture of what some of his artwork, these woven together sticks, as you said, thousands and thousands of them, what do they end up looking like?
Well, that's the thing, is that we actually had him here in December and toured around a very cold Door County at that time. But hoping to, kind of give them some inspiration for what this project might be and what it might look like. But they all end up being very different from each other. He does about 10 a year. And he's worked all over the world. And it's really quite fascinating. So, and you mentioned the word interactive.
Yeah.
This is probably 15, 20 feet in the air. You can walk through them. Do not climb them. But you can definitely walk through it and touch it and experience it. And that's what he really wants people to do. So, some have turned out to be more like characters. Others have been, jugs and different things, just kind of taking what he can from what our environment is and really creating a creative sculpture behind it.
Now, Wisconsin is home to different kinds of farm and art projects. There's the Farm Art Detour connected to Fermentation Fest. I've been on other art drives. Could you talk about just the like joy of bringing an art project like this into an agricultural setting?
Well, I think, we're going to continue to do things like this. At least that's our goal. But as this being the first one, and others have mentioned this to me too, really drawing the connection between art and nature, and then also having it in a setting of one of the oldest historic farms in the entire state, really draws everything together. And we're really excited about that piece to it. And we have this opportunity to bring a whole other group of folks, those that are really excited about the artist components of it, mm-hmm. and bringing them to our little nonprofit in Egg Harbor and seeing what we can do with it. So we're really quite excited.
Okay. If people love the idea of participating as a volunteer and helping to build this, how do they get in touch?
Everything is on our website. So I'm the one staff member of this beautiful organization so far. So if anybody wants to reach out, they will connect directly to me via email. And we're in the middle right now of looking for a lot of volunteers. We're about halfway there. So anybody that wants to help out, we're there for it.
Drew, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for sharing this with us today.
I really appreciate it, Rob. You guys have a good day.
That's Drew Richmond, Executive Director of Horseshoe Bay Farms in Door County. He talked to us about the organization and a new massive outdoor sculpture on the way this summer made out of sticks. You can find more information about volunteering or about going to see it when it is up and running. We've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time. Look for the segment note. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story in honor of Mother's Day.
An ode to the bedtime story. It comes to us from WPR's Jenny Peek, who wanted to pay tribute to one of her favorite activities as a new mom. She tells us how becoming a parent reignited a love for the children's books she had been missing since she was a little girl.
Oh, here, lean back.
Oh.
Tucked into bed with a world in your head as we cuddle and turn down the light. Where will you go when the stars start to glow? Tell me, what will you dream of tonight? Drifting away at the end of the day as the spellbinding sun disappears. What will you choose? You have nothing to lose because anything's possible here. What Will You Dream Of Tonight by Frances Stickley is one of my son Liam's favorite bedtime stories. Its pages unleash a world of fantasy. Treasure guarded by a fierce dragon, wintry treks under a rainbow of northern lights, a rocket ship guided by stars for the taking. As I read it to him, he sits nestled on my lap in the gray rocking chair that sits in the corner of his nursery. A dim overhead light and pink Himalayan salt lamp illuminate the pages. I can feel his soft breath and little heartbeat patter with the rhythm of the cadence of my words. He points out the moon, the little propeller plane soaring over the desert night sky, the cat creeping along the branch of a dark tree. It's my favorite place to be. And I hope it's one of his, too. You might take a ride down a waterfall slide as you glide through a tropical sky and swing past the leaves on a jungle trapeze. You are free. You are fast. You can fly. I always wanted to be a mom. Caretaking comes naturally, and it fills me up in more ways than I can describe. But one of the greatest joys of my journey into parenthood has been my rediscovery of children's books. I devoured them growing up. When I was 4 years old, I wanted to be a children's book author, an illustrator. But as I got older, the books got longer and the pages lost their color. When the sonogram showed a tiny beating heart and testing later confirmed we were expecting a healthy little boy, I started to imagine all of the things we would need to welcome him into our world. Bassinet, stroller, car seat, diapers, and books. Lots of books. Titles I recognized and ones that were new to me filled our baby registry. I went through rubber bins stacked to the brim with my old storybooks. I remembered laying in bed, my head on my mom's shoulder as she read the familiar words over and over again.
Good night, room. Good night, moon. Good night, cow jumping over the moon. Good night, light in the red balloon.
I think about my blanket Blue tucked under one arm and Brownie the teddy bear tucked under the other, safe and warm. What a joy to be able to relive that feeling. Now I get to pass that sense of place onto Liam, all while escaping into the world of adventure. A world of bears missing buttons, trains that think they can, a sea of rainbow fish and hippos going berserk. It makes me wonder why I ever stopped reading these beloved books in the first place. And reminds me to never stop again. Now cuddle up tight and we'll whisper goodnight as we drift into darkening skies. And I promise I'll stay just a heartbeat away. I'll be here when you open your eyes. So tucked into bed with a world in your head and a ceiling of stars up above. Wherever you go, I just want you to know. You are safe. You are home. You are loved.
That ode to bedtime stories was brought to us by WPR's Jenny Peek,
Mama,
and her son, Liam.
Can you say, I love you?
Wisconsin Life.
Thank you. Life.
Is a co-production of PBS Wisconsin and Wisconsin Public Radio.
London, Bangkok, Reno.
In partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum. Thanks, Liam.
Coming up, the WNBA started its regular season this last Friday without superstar Brittany Griner, who's been detained by Russia since the middle of February. We'll talk to a legal analyst about Griner's case and what could happen next. That's coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. The Phoenix Mercury WNBA team opened their regular season this last Friday night without star player Brittany Griner. Griner is a two-time Olympic gold medalist, WNBA champion with the Mercury in 2014, and a decorated dominant player in the Women's League. She also plays professionally in Russia during the WNBA's offseason. Griner was arrested at the airport in Moscow on February 17th for allegedly carrying illegal cannabis-derived oil for vaping in her luggage. Griner has yet to be charged, but has been in custody ever since the arrest. Last week, the U.S. State Department released a statement classifying Griner as, quote, wrongfully detained. Aaron Solomon is Chief Legal Analyst for Esquire Digital. Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob. That was a great lead-in.
Thank you. Credit to the producer who wrote most of it. Griner is wrongfully detained, according to the State Department. What does that mean?
I can translate wrongfully detained from both legalese and diplomatese into English. It means that what Russia said she didn't do. So she's there on false charges. She's a political prisoner.
Does that make it any easier or maybe even more difficult to get her out of Russia?
Well, the thing is neither. And, you know, when Marine Trevor Reed was released a week and a half ago, people were very enthusiastic. They said, well, this means that Brittany Griner is going to be released. But no, I mean, we've known that the United States and countries all over the world talk through diplomatic back channels when there is a political detainee or a hostage situation. One thing that we found out last week that is a very positive thing is that Bill Richardson, who was the former American ambassador to the United Nations, was appointed to have some involvement in the case. Now, he is a trained specialist in hostage negotiation. So what I found interesting about the announcement that Brittany was wrongfully detained was that the U.S. government didn't come out and say, and therefore, we see her as a political prisoner, a political detainee, a hostage, however you want to phrase it. Because obviously, with Bill Richardson's involvement, she is.
There's been concern from Griner's family and friends, from the WNBA, I think from the American government, that making a big popular outcry of this could make things worse for Griner, in effect, raise the cost of extricating her from Russia. Does that matter, do you think?
Well, they kind of changed their tune on that last week when they announced the wrongful detention. Even Brittany's family and her agent came out and said that they had been strongly advised to keep things quiet so that, you know, diplomats could diplomat. And that's fine. But that moment has passed. And I actually see a really good parallel here between another legal case that I followed extremely closely about a year ago. And that was another Britney Spears. And what really ended up, you know, fueling the end of Britney's end of her guardianship, of her conservatorship, was all of her fans making the hashtag Free Britney viral. So maybe if we change the spelling of Free Britney and add an extra T for Brittany Griner, that kind of attention is what we need to keep this in the public spotlight. Because for whatever reasons, and we can certainly discuss the reasons, this has been a case that has not been discussed anywhere near enough since she was detained at Moscow's main international airport.
And why do you think, and I've seen other people in the sports world in particular say, hey, why aren't we talking about this more?
Well, here's a bunch of my guesses. And if you put all these things together, she's super tall, covered in tattoos. She's black and she's lesbian. She doesn't fit the model of somebody that a lot of Americans, but certainly not all Americans, see as that all-American superstar basketball player. I always like to say, hey, you know what? What if this was Kyrie Irving or Kevin Garnett? You know that this would be on the front page of every major American newspaper every day. It would be the Kevin Garnett hostage watch, day 93. And it hasn't been that case at all with Brittany Griner, and that's a real shame.
We're talking to Aaron Solomon, Chief Legal Analyst for Esquire Digital, talking about WNBA superstar, gold medalist Brittany Griner, still detained in Russia. The State Department says even the initial charges weren't right. She's, in effect, wrongfully detained. Aaron, in normal times, a situation like this, a somewhat hostile government detaining a citizen under false pretenses, that would be tough. These aren't normal times. Russia at war with Ukraine, U.S. backing Ukraine. Does this make it a lot more complicated?
Yes. Plus, in normal times, they wouldn't have done this. The reason they did this is because they knew they were getting ready to invade Ukraine. They looked around Russia and said, who's the highest profile American athlete here? Or that we have access to, because Brittany was coming back internationally from a FIBA basketball tournament. And even though the number one sports league in Russia is the KHL, the Continental Hockey League, none of the American players are of the stature of Brittany Griner. So they said, well, it's going to be Brittany Griner. In normal times, this would never happen because the team that she plays for in the Russian top league, UMMC Yekaterinburg, is owned by a mining oligarch. And you don't do this to your own oligarchs. You only do it in exceptional circumstances. You don't steal the player that they're paying $1 million a year to and hoping to win the championship. So, you know, it's a really good hypothetical. One thing we do have to remember is that for years, American women basketball players, the top players, have had to play not only in Russia, but in places like China and Turkey. And they understand extremely well in all of these situations because they've got to play to supplement their income in the WNBA. They understand that there's nothing the U.S. government can do for you if you make dumb decisions in these kinds of countries. That's why from minute one, a lot of people who looked at this with a skeptical lens said this was simply a political taking. There's no way that Brittany Griner would have been naive enough to do what she was accused of doing.
I want to key in on that point. I mean, it sounds like speculation, Aaron. Like, how can we know that this was an intentional Russian plan from the start? We're about to invade Ukraine. We're going to grab this prominent American athlete.
Well, because if it wasn't something they were doing intentionally for leverage, it would have moved much quicker through their legal system. Now, we've got to remember that Russia is not like the United States. Russia is not governed by rule of law. So the fact that this is a political situation at this point means that nothing in the legal system has moved. She's simply been detained. One of two things are going to happen legally. My opinion is the hearing that she has set for May 19th will be further delayed. Or if that hearing happens, it's going to be super, super fast, and they're basically just going to give charges. Another thing that could happen is she could move very, very quickly, much quicker than what happened in the United States, through the legal system to a guilty verdict and sent somewhere like a labor camp. And that would give Russia even more leverage, saying, you wanted Brittany Griner back now. Well, now she's going to be serving hard time in one of our labor camps, like on the Chinese border or in Siberia. So what are we going to trade her for now? And that ultimately is what this all comes down to. Brittany Griner could be home tomorrow if the U.S. government and Russia would agree on an even trade. But just like a basketball trade, it doesn't work out that easily.
What could Russia want for releasing Brittany Griner?
Well, as you said, this is definitely speculation, but having followed the Russian situation closely and the invasion of Ukraine, I think that Russia has probably been talking to the United States about some kind of relaxation of some of the more minor economic sanctions. Not like, you know, no more SWIFT codes, but maybe a couple international partners can pay us in U.S. dollars rather than rubles, because rubles are really cumbersome. And the U.S. has said, no, that's not a fair trade at this point. Remember, the Trevor Reed release, he was traded for a Russian drug dealer, was months and months in the making, we found out. That's not something that happened overnight, nor will this happen overnight.
The central concern here, of course, has got to be Brittany Griner's well-being. For a while, the State Department couldn't visit her. Now I understand they've at least been able to have contact. What do we know about how she's doing?
All we know is what the Russian news agency TASS has told us, so we should give that 0.0% credence, which is her only major problem at this point is they can't find a bed that's big enough for her. I fear that Brittany Griner could be harmed either intentionally or unintentionally in detention. I mean, you know, she's someone who speaks very little Russian. She's being held as a prisoner, and who knows what could happen at any given day. It can't be great for her physical, mental, and spiritual health, which is also interesting that everybody who thought and hoped she'd be back for the beginning of the WNBA season, she won't be in game shape for a long time if we're lucky enough to get her back to the United States.
Now, you mentioned the idea of a publicity campaign of something like the Free Britney Spears movement. I assume that's directed at the United States side of things, because Russia, I think, in the last few months has proven it doesn't think much about public opinion right now.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly what happened with Britney Spears. The Free Britney hashtag put a lot of very harsh light on California's conservatorship system, so much so that Governor Gavin Newsom, by the time Britney was released from her conservatorship, had actually fundamentally changed California conservatorship law. So all the pressure in that situation was on the state of California. All the pressure here in the Britney Griner situation needs to be on the U.S. government and the diplomatic corps to get their job done.
In just our last half minute or so, I think you've laid out some of the worst case possibilities. What is your best case hope right now?
Well, the best case hope is that sooner rather than later, both parties agreed to something that would be a fair trade. Obviously, Brittany Griner was taken into custody because the Russian government wanted leverage in some kind of talks with the United States. Okay, well, now you have her, and it doesn't do any good just to keep her unless you feel that the longer you keep her, the higher her net worth is going to be. If Russia has something that they want and the United States is willing to make that trade, she could be home in a matter of days. I personally don't believe it's going to be a matter of days. I personally don't think that Brittany Griner will play in this WNBA season.
Aaron, thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Aaron Solomon is chief legal analyst for Esquire Digital with us today to look at the legal side of the case of American basketball superstar Brittany Griner, who continues to be held in Russia. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, the same arguments in a draft ruling could possibly be used against contraception, same-sex marriage, and other court precedents. We'll find out what could be next. And we'll have a call-in for dog fans. This might surprise you. Some research says dog breeds may not affect dog personalities. We want to know what you see in the dogs in your life. That's tomorrow here on Central Time. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. And then we talk to a Wisconsin economics professor about a flurry of recent news around inflation, interest rates, and the U.S. job market. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, if you've ever forced a smile or pretended to act happy while at work, you may be performing emotional labor. We'll check out the connection between our emotions, our jobs, and our health. First, how you feel about the current U.S. economy might depend on what numbers you look at. Unemployment is low. The country's still adding jobs, leading to higher wages. But the Federal Reserve raised interest rates to combat high inflation, and the stock market has recently made big swings, first up and then down, and today down some more. A lot to sort through with the state of the economy, and we want to hear what you think. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How are you experiencing the current economy? What matters to you? Do you think it's strong, weak, somewhere in between? What do you look at to measure the strengths of the economy? Is inflation affecting your life? If you've been hunting for a new job, were you able to find one? Are you worried about the stock market, how it might be affecting, say, retirement savings? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Thomas Kemp is a professor and chair of the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire. Thomas, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be here, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've had similar conversations in the past. What right now is standing out to you as the most important or worrisome economic indicator?
Yeah, well, I think the inflation rate is what everybody's kind of got their eye most on, and that's certainly a concerning thing. You know, inflation 40 years high, been going on now for several months. I think it's really starting to bite into people's day to day lives a bit.
I want to give a listen to Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell after the Fed increased the interest rate by 0.5%. That's the biggest increase in over two decades. Here's a listen.
Inflation is much too high, and we understand the hardship it is causing, and we're moving expeditiously to bring it back down. We have both the tools we need and the resolve that it will take to restore price stability on behalf of American families and businesses. The economy and the country have been through a lot over the past 2 years and have proved resilient. It is essential that we bring inflation down if we are to have a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit all.
Thomas, how big a deal is this half a percent rate increase?
Well, I think, you know, the Fed's really in a little bit of a bind with this. I think a lot of the inflation is being driven by supply side issues, you know, supply constraints, reduction in the size and capacity of the U.S. labor force, and really the ability of the U.S. economy to produce goods and services in a very strong demand environment. And there's really not too much the Fed can do to resolve that. You know, they're raising key rates is really, I think, more of a suggestion that they're telling the economy to cool it a little bit in an attempt to bring back prices. But I'm not sure how much they're going to be able to control inflation with these increases.
Part of the goal of an increase like this, as I understand it, is to maybe lower demand for some things by driving up borrowing rates. But there's a worry that that can go too far and lead to a recession. How worried are you about that?
Yeah, this is a so-called soft landing that we, you know, we hear so much about, the idea that the Fed can raise rates and it'll cool off spending a little bit, but that it won't go so far that it leads to a recession, because, of course, recessions are just all of us spending less, and that results in people being thrown out of work. So the Fed thinks that they can still manage this soft landing. We'll see. With these rate increases, if we look at interest rates historically speaking, they're still quite low by historical terms. They're, you know, a little higher than they've been in the last couple of years, but still, looking back 20, 30 years, they're still extremely low. So still borrowing is still pretty cheap. Again, historically speaking, it's relatively cheap and easy for businesses to get their hands on capital in most cases. So we'll see.
Then we've got employment numbers. Unemployment remains low, 3.6% nationwide, record low in Wisconsin in March. So, yay, good news about the economy there?
Yeah, well, I think the economy in general is pretty good. I mean, one of our real problems with inflation is that maybe the economy's a little stronger than we're capable of sustaining. It isn't translating too much into wage increases yet, which is would maybe be a little better for folks than what we have. But yeah, the economy as a whole is, you know, despite everything that's happened in the last 2 years and even in the last 6 months, remains quite strong.
Talking to Thomas Kemp from UW-Eau Claire, professor of economics there, looking at a lot of different economic news. Inflation still high, unemployment still low, and a rocky stretch on the stock market. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel any of this news affecting you on a day-to-day basis? That inflation, the higher gas and food prices in some cases, are you feeling the pinch from that? Is your job situation looking pretty good, or are you not feeling those low unemployment numbers in your life? And you can join in, of course, with your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Thomas, last week we saw a big jump in the stock market, longest in X number of years. I can't remember the exact amount. The next day, the biggest drop in the same number of years. And then that decline going, not quite as bad, but still going downward today. What's going on there?
Boy, I tell you what, if you figure it out, please send me a message. I can shore up my retirement savings a little more. I'll be darned if I know what's going on. It's, you know, it's going up, going down, as you said. To me, you know, volatility usually signals a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, maybe that's what we have. People aren't sure, is inflation just temporary? Is it going to be persistent? Are these job numbers going to hold up? Are U.S. workers going to come back to work? Because, you know, we still have a lot of people out of the labor force that, you know, left at the beginning of COVID and haven't come back. So to me, it just says that maybe there's a lot of other people out there who are just as confused about stuff as I am.
Right. I mean, I think we try to look at the stock market as sort of this rational indicator where these, smart people are making these decisions based on real-time information. And then sometimes it's like, or maybe they're, you know, a herd of wild birds just like dashing about from the slightest scare in the brush over there.
Yeah, we're all human beings, right? So maybe so.
I wanted to key in on something you just mentioned, people coming back to the workforce. And that's been a concern, a low workforce participation rate, I think is what economists call it. An article in the Washington Post, this is just last week, saying we're seeing a lot of people who did some kind of early retirement during the pandemic, a lot of them unretiring now. Are we seeing that happen in significant numbers, though?
Yeah, there's some evidence of that, but that's right, is that most aren't doing that. The data suggests that folks over 55 have removed themselves from the labor force at an unusually high rate. In other words, we compare that to, say, younger workers. There's far more sort of post-COVID absence in those older workers who have just, you know, decided that maybe they have other things to do. And, you know, and that's part of the challenge we have right now. People are going gangbusters buying stuff, but we're just having a hard time keeping things supplied up to the extent that people want it.
And this issue of workforce participation, I think people were worried about a little bit before we heard of COVID. Is this just a new normal now, especially after COVID, that we're going to see just a lower percentage of Americans in the job market?
Yeah, well, right. As you say, it's something that had been declining prior to COVID, labor force participation rates. And so there's that thing going on. But on top of that, on top of the decline that was going on before COVID, when we look at workers, again, over 55, and that's just how the BLS breaks down the data. Mm-hmm. But when we look at workers over 55 years of age, we see that there's an additional trend, decreasing trend on top of that trend that's already mentioned. So certainly people are stepping back from participating in the labor force on the whole.
Now, for people over 55, for an individual, I could see this as being a good news or a bad news thing. Like, if somebody retired at 56, it may be because, hey, I feel secure in my retirement. I don't need to work anymore. Lovely. Or it could be I can't find a job that pays well enough to justify doing it. Bad. Or I'm older. I'm at higher risk from COVID. I don't want to expose myself. Also bad. How much of this is bad news? How much of this is maybe good news for people?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's you know, everybody's going to have a different story. And for some folks, this is reflective of an overall good thing. You know, maybe they've saved up, they're good to go. You know, maybe they weren't planning on retiring right now, but boy, COVID has made work more difficult. So that trade-off for them changed a little bit, and they just decide to wrap it up. Whereas other folks may, you know, maybe in much rougher spots. But that, you know, that's how it is. You don't really know because all the stories are different.
We're talking about the state of the U.S. economy with Thomas Kemp, economics professor at UW Eau Claire. What's your story? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you one of the people we were just talking about in that 55 and over, especially age group? Did you retire early? Are you coming back to the workforce? Do you want to, or are you DUN done? Call in at 800-642-1234. And when you look at your future economic decisions, are you looking to make big ticket purchases, or are you looking to dial back because you're uncertain about the future? Love to hear your vantage point on the economy from your workplace, from your household. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with UW Eau Claire economics professor Thomas Kemp with us today, looking at the ups and downs of the current U.S. economy. Good job numbers, bad inflation numbers, stock market volatile, bouncing around, a lot of uncertainty. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is any of this affecting your life, your workplace? Do you have questions? Call 800-642-1234. Did you retire early? Are you going to go back to the workplace? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll go to a caller now. Marlene is with us in New Hope. Marlene, hi.
Hi, hello. Yes, I'm over 55 and my workplace was not practicing any required COVID precautions. So I stopped working in 2020 in November, and I have had a difficult time finding other work. Of course, I'm an older worker, but I've now found work. It's about an hour away, and gas prices are through the roof. I figure it's going to cost me about $500 a month in gas alone just to get to my new employment.
Wow. So. And Marlene, if I may ask, it sounds like you're in a position where you need to work, like just full on retiring now, like for many people,
yes,
not an option.
Right. I'm not. And they've also raised the retirement age. You know, it's no longer 62. It's 67 for my age group. So I've got to work a number of years yet. Got a number of years. And my son is also looking for other work. He's a very good worker. But as someone who daily perused, like Indeed, there aren't very many well-paying jobs out there for all the business they're talking about. The $15 an hour barely would cover any rent, and I'm outside of Stevens Point in that area for him. So I don't understand how they're saying there are so many jobs available when most of the jobs are really not something that a single person can live on.
Marlene, thank you so much for sharing your and your son's experiences at 800-642-1234. Marlene Thomas, an interesting point there. Maybe there's lots of jobs out there. They can't always pay for that long commute and the gas involved, the high rent and housing costs we're hearing about.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. And that's what's frustrating thing for me. And I'm sure it sounds like it is for Marlene, too, and her family. Because, wages really aren't keeping pace with prices lately. And so we're seeing a lot of areas increase in prices, notably energy, food, and of course, transportation, which is very closely related to energy. Those prices are shooting up pretty quickly, but wages, not so much. And so that's leaving folks a little bit in the lurch there.
Marlene, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. You mentioned food and energy, Thomas. Now, these things didn't happen because of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but on top of what was happening, you've got a major global food producer in Ukraine, a major global energy producer in Russia. Now, lots of people not wanting to buy their products. How much of an extra bite is that in terms of inflation when it comes to food and energy?
It's really hard to isolate the effect of the Ukraine situation and Russia from the broader effect of COVID and the resultant supply chain disruptions. But, I mean, there's no doubt that it's having some effect. Everybody's sort of trying to figure out what this new world looks like. We've had four decades of globalization now that appears to be somewhat reversing. So you have all these international firms out there trying to resettle supply chains, and that's going to result in a lot of disruption even beyond the Russian-Ukrainian conflict.
Marlene, thanks again for calling. Isaac joins us now in Milwaukee. Isaac, hello.
Hi. I just want to agree totally with what the last couple of callers have been saying. There are, of course, a ton of jobs out there right now, but almost all of them are low-paying. Employers will tell us that they've raised their wages dramatically, and in many cases that's true, but that doesn't mean that the wages that they're paying still are enough to cover basic cost of living. I think that we're seeing a case of upward wage rigidity, some economists would call it, especially ones who were working during the Depression, or sticky wages. Basically, employers are just going to need to pay a lot more. They haven't been paying people for what they're worth anywhere close to it, and they're going to have to get closer to it now than they have been so far if they want to hire people.
Isaac, thanks for the call. Thomas, how sticky are those wages?
Well, usually when we refer to sticky wages, we're talking about wages moving downwards. So we hope they're not moving in that direction, but that's certainly possible. But, your caller makes an excellent point that sort of the cost of living is going up fairly significantly, and if wages don't follow suit, then the folks who are sort of at the bottom of the wage spectrum, as it were, they're the ones who really feel that pinch. And maybe there's other ways that they know to get by that don't require them participating in the labor force. And so it may be that we're seeing a lot of people out there who are choosing alternative ways of going about living with extended family, living in more modestly priced neighborhood or communities, finding other ways to sort of get by than the sort of standard 9-to-5 job.
Isaac, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Brooke with us in Madison. Hi, Brooke.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I just tuned in, really enjoying it. I am a CNA. I work in the healthcare field, and I just wanted to tell all of the listeners that healthcare, it's job security, and the wages, because of COVID, with the crisis pay, you know, we got bonuses for the crisis pay being on the front lines. And I've also worked through healthcare agencies for about 5 years before COVID happened. And when COVID hit, the agency market blew up because you have a lot of workers in these healthcare facilities, hospitals and long-term care alike, that don't really agree or align with the vaccination mandates. So there's a lot of openings there. And I would just encourage, you know, all of the listeners, or maybe if you have, you know, children that you're worried about that are in high school, there's so many programs out there for you to start out with your CNA, get it paid for. If you're okay working with people, it's just a great place to be in. And unfortunately, with all of the trauma and heartbreak through COVID, the job market is still really strong in healthcare.
And I want to ask, Brooke, because I remember having conversations pre-COVID about CNAs, certified nurse assistants, the pay being really low and having a hard time bringing people into the job because of that. Did you see that pre-COVID?
Yes, good point. I have had my CNA since I was, you know, a young, like late teens. Wow. And, you know, starting out at $10 an hour, it's really sad. It feels like robbery as someone who, you know, and I get it. Unfortunately, a lot of the places that are Medicare funded don't have a lot of extra resources to pay very well. But since COVID, the wages have gone up. For example, through the healthcare agencies that I work with, and there's plenty, you can just Google, you know, healthcare agency, I get paid up to $36 an hour for some of my shifts that are you know, critically low staff.
Got it. Brooke, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. We just have a couple minutes left, but I appreciate that. Thomas, this is an industry that clearly, from what Brooke is saying anyway, has changed a lot over the course of COVID. Does anything else strike you as being that dramatic a change?
Yeah, well, what comes to mind there is, you know, the dramatic change story that Brooke's talking about is that, you know, we do live in this pretty quick changing environment right now. And folks maybe who are having, you know, finding themselves on the wrong end of the thing, you know, maybe now is the time to start, you know, networking a little bit, talking to people. And I don't mean anything necessarily formal, but talking to people, you know, finding out what's going on about there. You know, I expect there's probably a lot of stories like Brooks where there's these targeted labor markets that have turned around and they're really, really looking for folks. So, you know, now's the time to be looking for new directions, I think.
Brooke, thanks again for sharing that with us. Thomas, in our just last minute or so, what are you watching for next with all these sort of differing and sometimes dueling indicators out there?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. I'm keeping my eye out for signs that inflation is going to be persistent. And what specifically what I'm looking for there is that if it starts getting written into contracts, if it starts becoming sort of built into people's expectations where they're saying, well, I expect it to be 10% next year, or 10% the year after that, like what happened in the late 70s. And I'm really hoping that doesn't happen. I'm really hoping that this is inflation is due to, you know, the challenges we're having around the world.
Thomas, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. It's always a pleasure, Rob.
That's Thomas Kemp, professor and chair of the Department of Economics at UW-Eau Claire. He was with us today sorting through the latest economic news to try to figure out what it's all pointing toward. Still time for you to share your own experience. How is the economy affecting you, your place of work, your job, your household budget? Let us know. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.